Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 68 of Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, podcaster for the site. Hope you guys are doing great, getting ready for the weekend. This is a brand new show. It's not a classic show. How about that? Returning for the first time in a few weeks. And to do that, you know, there's so much news going on. I had to get not just one guest. I had to give you guys two guests for the very first time, not on the phone at the same time, but in separate interviews. So we have leading off, we have the one and only Kevin Ioli. Very excited to have him. He's been on my list for a while. And given everything going on with boxing and MMA, with this fight you may have heard of, Mayweather-McGregor, I wanted to chat with him and ask him a couple questions that he hasn't been asked before, or at least attempted to. So you heard that. And then also UFC Singapore coming up early Saturday morning, depending on when you're listening to this. So for that portion of the program, I decided to recruit Patrick Wyman. He of Deadspin and the Washington Post, past guest on the show. And he and I chatted for about 20 minutes about that. So this is a very fast-moving episode, very fun stuff. I asked him also about Mayweather-McGregor, too. But there is a little bit for everyone on this show, so I think you guys are going to enjoy this. Enough of me talking. I'll talk to you after the interviews here. And enjoy Kevin Ioli. Enjoy Patrick Wyman. And thanks so much for listening. So our guest this week is a very special one, having covered the world of combat sports since before many of you listening to this were even born. He's been on the front lines of fight sports and has talked to anyone and everyone who has mattered that has either thrown a fist, thrown a kick, and even those who promote those people. You can read his work at Yahoo Sports in both MMA and boxing, where he broke the much-anticipated announcement that an agreement between Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor had finally been reached. With that, we welcome the one and only Kevin Ioli to this week's edition of Josh Nason's Punch-Out. And Kevin, I know you've done a ton of media interviews in the past couple days or so. I'm going to ask you a question that I guarantee you have not been asked in all of those interviews, all right?
Okay.
Give me a good Dave Meltzer story.
Oh, wow. A good Dave Meltzer story. That is a really good one. Well, I will tell you this. The one thing that comes to mind offhand, and Lee Samuels is the publicist for Top Rank Boxing, and Lee has been the promoter for some of the biggest stars. Well, Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Leonard, you know, he worked with all those guys. But Lee is like a massive pro wrestling fan. And so one day he asked me if I wanted to do something, and I said, well, you know, I can't because I'm going to dinner in Vegas with Dave Meltzer later that day. Oh, my God, can I meet Dave Meltzer? And so Meltzer sat there and regaled us with hours of stories about pro wrestlers, which I didn't really care too much about, but which Lee was eating up. And so the two of them we changed a 1 hour dinner into about a 3 hour marathon there. So that was one of the ones that comes to mind. But Dave is an awesome guy, and I miss having him as my partner at Yahoo Sports.
Well, I know you guys have been friends for a long time. Tom Trevasi, obviously in that crew as well, and it's an Oliver Kopp. I always like hearing the stories, like when all you guys kind of get together and basically just hang out and talk and things like that, and go long into the night with just telling old stories and things like that. It's like an old baseball team or something.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times there's eating involved in that as well. So.
Oh, good, good. Excellent stuff. Well, I know we have you for a limited amount of time just because you've been doing so much. So we'll get right into it. About how many interviews have you done in like the last 36 hours, 24 hours, give or take?
I honestly think, I would say yesterday, because I did them yesterday up until I went to bed. I mean, my last one was 10:30 Pacific time. It was like a 20-minute, and I went to bed at 11 o'clock. And I would say, just roughly counting, I did probably 25 yesterday. And today, when you and I hooked up to do this, I thought this would be my last spot, but I have two more subsequently coming up after this. I would say today, maybe a little bit less, maybe like 15 to 18 so far right now. It's been incredible. And also, I was on UFC tonight. I Skyped into the show and talked about that, which I didn't expect that to happen. And I've had a lot more. I have had so many texts and so many people at the same time that I'm losing track. Okay, did I call this person back? It's like wild.
What is the most common question that you've got over that, 25 or so interviews so far?
if Connor has any chance. You know, it's like, what, you know, they ask me if Connor can win, I say no. And then they really push for what infinitesimal way, if it were to happen, if a miracle were to come, that is the one thing that everybody is, you know, really, you know, they all ask about the pay-per-view numbers and all that, but I think that the question that is repeated the most is really just like, how can Connor possibly win this fight?
Do you think that's going to help or hurt the promotion here over the next 2.5 months? Kind of the narrative, the talking about, like, I mean, I think everyone kind of seems to get it that Connor is definitely an underdog going into this. But you think that's going to hurt at all? Is that something they're going to have to overcome?
You know, I don't. And getting the record, like, you know, you're saying overcome. And when I hear somebody they're going to have to overcome, I think, well, they may, you know, what are they going to have to overcome? They're going to sell 3 million pay-per-views, you know, with just turning the lights on the day of the fight, doing nothing else. And if they promote it, they're going to sell a lot more. I think this is a 3.75 to 4.5 million pay-per-view fight. That's my prediction going into this thing. So I think the negative drumbeat, you know, because people are going to hear over the next 2 months, hey, Connor has no chance, Connor has no chance. But I think they kind of view this as like kind of the light entertainment. You know, some nights you go to a movie and you want to see, you know, some intense drama, some with some deep plot, and other nights you want to see Porky's. Well, this is Porky's, and this is what people are going to see, right? And it's just like, it's like a train wreck, and it's not really a serious sporting event per se, other than the money. But it is, it's one of those things that I think the customer will go in with eyes wide open. It's not for everybody, but I think a lot of people are showing interest, and I think that interest, Josh, is only going to grow as time moves on.
So I've been doing this for about a year and a half. That's the first Porky's reference so far. So definitely five stars for you, Kevin. That is.
I was just glad you didn't ask me Porky's 1 or Porky's 2. That would have been difficult.
We'll have to save that for another time and get into kind of the breakdown of that. But after all the questions that you've been asked about this and with General Sports Talk, and I'm sure you've done a lot of different stuff here the past couple of days, is there one question that hasn't been asked that's really kind of top of your mind that you would have loved to kind of opine on and talk about? Is there something sticking out?
I don't really think so. I mean, some people are more knowledgeable about combat sports than others. And so, you know, I get some interviews where they listen to what I say and they follow up and they ask me an intelligent question. And, you know, you go back and forth that way. And then there's other ones that, you know, like they have a script and somebody told them, here's 4 or 5 questions to ask this guy, and yeah, they follow that script. But there hasn't been anything where I said, wow, there's a glaring weakness. Nobody's asking me about this. I think, you know, in the wide variety that I have done, we've covered pretty much any conceivable angle of this fight that I can think of.
And I'm sure we'll get to every possible angle here over the next 2.5 months. And my next question is, you know, MMA fans, so there, obviously, you know, there's these two kind of different worlds, so to speak, of boxing and MMA, and there is some crossover with fans, but there are some fans that just primarily like either. And we primarily talk to MMA fans and pro wrestling fans, obviously, on our site. For someone that has been in this game for so long and has seen and talked to everyone and dealt with your fair share of bullshit being told to you, you know, probably more often than not, with fighters, promoters, all that stuff, and you've seen promotion after promotion, how things have gone, and things that have exceeded and things that have not exceeded expectations. What can MMA fans look for over the next 2.5 months for how the boxing world works and how Showtime and how this whole thing is going to come together? How's it going to be different than what they're usually or what they're used to with the UFC and other promotions like that?
That's an interesting question. And so a lot of times you hear MMA fighters say, I love to make that Floyd Mayweather money, or I love to make that Manny Pacquiao money. And so it's the way the two sports are done. I prefer the MMA way because it provides better fights up and down the card. But what happens historically in MMA, I think the culture is, you know, started, you know, by Pride or UFC to have deep cards, have a lot of evenly matched fights. And so you don't just come for one fight and then you promote all of the fights. In boxing, all they promote is the main event, and every once in a while, maybe the co-main event. but it's just, you know, laser focused on whoever that main event is. This week it's Kovalev and Ward, and you don't even talk about anybody else. You know, in September it's going to be Canelo and Triple G, and you're not going to worry about who else is there. MMA and the media covers every single fighter, and I wake up in the morning and, you know, if it was boxing, I would know, okay, I'm going to look to see 15 Mayweather stories or 15, Pacquiao stories. It's MMA, and I don't know, is it going to be fights this week? Is it going to be UFC fights? Is it going to be Bellator fights? Is it going to be, you know, Legacy? I mean, everything gets covered. And so you're going to see a difference in the laser focus and the promotion. You're going to be so tired of Mayweather when this is all over, because they're just going to hammer, you know, that Mayweather angle, so as well as the Conor angle. You know, that is just going to be, it's going to be on those two, to the exception of everybody else on that card.
So that segues into some of my key takeaways from the media call that happened Wednesday night. And some, I want to kind of run a few of these by you, and given your boxing lens and your UFC lens, MMA lens, kind of what you think of some of these observations here. So one of them, the first one is the decision to make this a quote unquote boxing day, as Dana White put it. A lot of people were wondering if this might be a hybrid card, kind of like what Bellator used to have, or maybe there might be a UFC event earlier in the day. But according to Dana White and everyone involved, it's just going to be a straight boxing day. Did that surprise you at all, or do you think I was interested in that because, again, trying to attract this other audience, being so focused on the main event, I'm surprised there wasn't any effort to do maybe even something earlier in the day to kind of make it a full combat sports day. Were you surprised that they're making it just boxing?
A little bit, but there was some issues there. You know, UFC has a rights deal with Fox. You know, Showtime has a rights deal with Mayweather. So, you know, you can't, you know, can you switch? How can you switch and put what on? And then they want, you know, I've been in arenas, and I'm sure you have too, where there's been a cage and a ring, you know, on the floor. Those seats are going to be selling for, you know, $7,500 or $10,000 a piece. And when you put a octagon that's, you know, a 30-foot octagon, that takes a massive amount of space up. And so, you know, having that octagon in for preliminaries, if they would do it like that, would just destroy, and you would, you know, take away a massive number of tickets for somebody that's not going to sell anything. So I that's not surprising that they didn't do that. I thought they would somehow try to have some way of integrating the two, but, you know, I never really fully expected a mixed card, so to speak. You know, I think what they'll do, you know, maybe is have some kind of UFC, you know, highlights and, you know, the UFC area, the UFC experience for, you know, I forget what they call it when fans come up and they can see that. But I doubt that they will have, anything more, you know, beyond that.
Mm. Another thing I noticed is on the call and the image that or the gift that Floyd Mayweather sent out and so on. The term UFC, I didn't see that anywhere. I saw all the other, you know, promotions, Showtime, Mayweather Promotions, blah, 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 and everything on the top of the imagery. I didn't see a reference to UFC, no logo. On the intro of the call, Conor was referred to as a quote-unquote Irish superstar and not the UFC lightweight champion. My sense is that UFC, in their whole role in this, especially in some of the stuff Dana was saying, was that my impression is that they are simply providing the ability for Conor to negotiate, getting a cut of this, and they're not really quote-unquote co-promoters. Is that kind of your sense of how things went with this?
Well, yes and no. I mean, in the grand scheme, that is true. But, you know, you heard, if you were on that call, you heard who the dominant personality on that call was, and it was no question Dana White.
Yeah.
And, you know, he answered, and you heard him, you know, chastising one of the boxing reporters on there. And, you know, he was, you know, Dana was typical Dana on that call. And I think, you know, UFC is going to put their mark on this promotion. You know, they want their brand done a certain way. But Mayweather has a contract with Showtime that provided Showtime with certain rights. And so to get this fight done, you know, Conor and Dana had to agree that, you know, Showtime was going to be in the driver's seat and call a lot of the shots. I do believe, you know, when the fight is whoever the ring announcer is, I'm going to guess it's going to be the classy Jimmy Lennon Jr., but whoever the ring announcer might be, I think, you know, they'll, you know, when he goes through the long introduction, you know, brought to you by Showtime in association with Mayweather Promotions, UFC, and blah, 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 blah. I think, you know, that you'll hear UFC referred to as in association with. So, you know, I think that they will be part of it from that standpoint, but I don't think that they're going to get too caught up on this because they know it couldn't have happened, you know, any other way given the contractual situation that existed with Floyd.
Right. What do you, kind of the $100 million question as we get ready to close out here is, what do you think it says about the state of the UFC and MMA in general that McGregor had to essentially go to another sport and get a guy out of retirement to earn a payday that's going to surpass his entire UFC career earnings to date and then some? It's kind of crazy when you think about that, right?
I don't look at it quite the same way because okay. I think if you say, you know, like, you look at a baseball player, you know, how many players make $100 million in a season, right? You know, and how many, you know, or however you want to put it, you know, Conor's going to make $100 million more from this fight. And so, you know, in an individual sport, you know, that can happen. So, you know, I don't see it that surprising. I mean, I think, you know, MMA is certainly the equal of, if not the superior to boxing in 2017 in terms of just, you know, the, you know, end to end interest. You know, there's more MMA fans out there, I believe, than there are boxing fans. Now, the one thing that may be different is that, you know, no question boxing fans are older. Demographically, that's proven. You know, I don't subscribe anymore, but I did for many, many years to the Nielsen report, and I would see the Nielsen ratings. And the one thing you would see about boxing ratings, it was always P55 plus, you know, people 55 and older. Yeah. That was the number one audience. And in MMA, it's, you know, 18 to 34 and 18 to 49, and those are the groups that the advertisers target. So there's no question that while MMA has the broader fan base and I think is going to widen the gap as time goes by, the boxing fans are more well-heeled. I think that, you know, there are more professionals that have followed boxing that are, you know, 50 years old, 60 years old, that type of thing. And that is kind of what I would say, you know, when I think of this is the big thing.
Final question. Dana's attitude in the call, very positive, saying Showtime is, quote unquote, kind enough to allow them to do some content, UFC embed and things like that. Playing really nice and, you know, not the typical other than that one question you referenced there. Playing very nice with everyone. Do you think this tends to turn at some point? You think somewhere down the road we're kind of get a little different tune? Or what's your sense knowing all the big players involved?
I think Dana and Lennon Ellerbe, the CEO of Mayweather Promotions, will get along. I think, you know, it wouldn't shock me to see him clash heads with Steven Espinosa a little bit as time goes by. And certainly, I expect, you know, Floyd to take shots at Dana. So I think you're going to see double barrel attack on Floyd from Dana and Conor. I think that's definitely going on. But, you know, Floyd, I wrote this a while ago. Floyd, in his first pro fight, wore Dana's logo. Dana was manufacturing clothing for fighters at that point, and his logo was called Bull and Bajor Boxing. And he got Floyd in Floyd's first pro fight to wear his thing. And, you know, so now Floyd brings it up, and, you know, I did Dana a favor because he was starving and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he likes to mock him, and, you know, Dana will have it. So I think you'll hear a lot about that. The two of them will go back and forth. And I think, you know, that will add just to the craziness of it, where not only are the two fighters bickering, but you're going to have one of the promoters bickering with the other fighter.
It's going to be pretty wild. 2.5 months, a sprint to the finish. Who knows what's going to happen? Should be a lot of fun. Kevin, before we let you go, chance to plug Twitter. Any key stories coming up on Yahoo Sports? The floor is yours to go ahead and promote.
Kevin, I on Twitter, so I'd love to have anybody on there. I just published a story talking about, you know, why Mayweather basically scored a hat trick on HBO, you know, how this fight is going to kill three other HBO fights. Saturday night's Kovalev Ward fight, August 26th, Miguel Cotto is coming back in Carson, California. Who's going to cover that show? And then, of course, Triple G and Canelo. I think this fight is going to hurt that one. I just wrote a column on that. Literally just got published at Yahoo Sports.
Great stuff. Kevin, you're a legend in the game. We look forward to talking later this year about journalism. We'll geek out a little bit about that, a little bit more of your career, but I know you got to run. Kevin Ioli, thanks so much for joining Josh Jason's Punch Out this week. This has been great.
I appreciate you, Josh. Thanks so much.
Well, in this very special star-studded edition of the show, we're happy to welcome back a past guest. And he is, this guy is, I'm surprised I was able to get on his radar again. After all the stuff that he's doing, he's turned into a big-time podcasting star. He is not just in the MMA realm, which is great. He obviously writes MMA for both Deadspin and the Washington Post, hosts the Heavy Hands podcast, as well as these two podcasts that are not MMA-related, The Fall of Rome, and also History Matters. We welcome back Patrick Wyman to Josh Nason's Punch Out. And Patrick, I know, again, since the last time we chatted, you've become this major star in the podcasting realm. I think all thanks to me and your appearance on this show.
So, I think that's I give that a lot of credit. Yes, I think that is absolutely responsible.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, I haven't seen any checks come my way or PayPal or even a Venmo. So I'm just
I was going to say I lost your PayPal information. So if you want to just slip that to me, we'll get on those back payments.
Good to know. But yeah, I mean, you and I were just talking a few minutes before all this stuff. This is you're doing like all kinds of fun stuff, and it's really like, I see you've really taken off, but you're really kind of taken off, not just, again, the MMA realm, which you're doing, you mentioned, because you can do it and it's fun to do it, but these other podcasts with Fall of Rome and History Matters and some other stuff. This is, it's a completely unique niche you kind of found for yourself, and you've really found a great audience.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. It's nice to be able to cover MMA now because I want to cover MMA, and to kind of pick and choose the topics that I really want to dig into. So like it frees me up in a lot of ways to have more fun with it. And like MMA is drastically more fun now than it was when I like had to have a take on absolutely everything. It's nice to be able to say, you know what? I'm not going to be concerned about this thing or that thing or this other thing. It's like it's remarkably freeing.
So for those that are not familiar with either Fall of Rome or History Matters, why don't you give them the elevator pitch and why they should subscribe?
Well, you should subscribe, A, because I think it's a really good show, but B, because I genuinely think that history is an important tool for helping us understand our world, for giving us tools to think with and tools to understand what's happening around us, not just in a direct sense, but it helps our ability to think comparatively, because the world doesn't have to be the way that it is, right? And if we can dig into past worlds that were organized differently, that had different organizing assumptions about why things were the way that they were, then I think that gives us a lot of insight into our own present condition. And also, I think history should be entertaining. I mean, I think you should be able to listen to a story and be entertained by it. So that's why I think you should listen to Fall of Rome, because it's useful, because it's entertaining, and also because, you know, I think I have some insight into these matters. I spent a lot of time working on them. So it's authoritative too, if that's a thing that you're into.
So you can check that out. We'll get to the plugs here in a bit. And talking about, you know, history and making it fun and all this, we were talking with Kevin Ioli for about 20 minutes about this. I don't know if you heard, Patrick, that there's a Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor fighting in August. Have you heard that yet?
I did hear that. I heard something about that. Just a little whisper. Confirmed, right? Yeah. No.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I found out on MySpace.
It popped up on my Friendster feed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So so we have this, and so we talked for a bit about that and tried to do some non-traditional questions. We talked to, you know, on the interview with Kevin, I asked him, you know, what's the most common question you've gotten this last, you know, 24 to 36 hours of doing all these radio hits and interviews. And he said, does Conor have a chance? That's what frequently has come up the most. as you kind of see, you know, you've heard a lot of the chatter about this, some of the stupid banter, as you've noted on Twitter, just the completely the idiocy of some of these mainstream sports outlets and how they're talking about this and all this. Is there one question or narrative or something in your mind that you wish people would be talking about more with this whole fight and this whole affair?
I think that it's not really combat sports so much as it is pop culture. Like, I don't think that you can look at this and compare it to other combat sports events. This is not Mayweather Pacquiao. It's not McGregor Aldo or McGregor Diaz or whatever. This is spectacle. It is pure pop culture spectacle. And you can take that as a negative. I don't think you necessarily have to. I think that this has more in common with a Katy Perry song or a Transformers movie than it does with other fights, in the sense that there is no barrier to entry for having an opinion on it. Like, you don't have to be deep into boxing or MMA to have heard of this and to have thoughts on it. And that, like, you're not trying necessarily to appeal to combat sports fans with it. You're trying to make this a part of a kind of a general pop culture conversation that extends beyond the bounds of any sort of sports subculture. And that's, you know, that means we're going to be forced to, those of us who are actually in this bubble, are going to be forced to spend 2 months listening to just absolutely inane nonsense from the likes of Colin Cowherd and Jason Whitlock and Skip Bayless and just a murderer's row of idiots. But on the other hand, that also means that it's going to expose both of these guys to the kind of attention that is impossible to get otherwise. Like, this is, it's just huge. Everybody and your brother is going to be talking about this.
And I think very similar to Mayweather Pacquiao, I equate this to a very highly paid promotional appearance.
Yeah, basically. I think that's exactly what it is. Like, the fight is ancillary. The fight is not even really relevant to all this. Like, what people are buying here is the build and the narratives that come out of it and the bajillion different ways that you can find a way to have an angle on this fight. The fight itself is almost irrelevant to that. Like, by the time the two fighters step in the ring, you've already paid your money, you know, and what you're paying for is not the 36 minutes or whatever they're going to be doing in the ring. It's everything that leads up to that. It's the kind of meaning that you can extract from all of this ridiculousness.
You can read more of Patrick's thoughts on that on Deadspin.com today, being Friday. Floyd Mayweather Jr. is fighting Conor McGregor. What the fucking fuck? You can find that on Deadspin right now. But we talked so much about this. There's a fun little show happening early Saturday morning, East Coast time, coming from Singapore. It's Fight Pass only show. And in this stretch of, you know, with the Mayweather-McGregor kind of eclipse, just everything else is overshadowed. And you know, there's some concern about this over the next couple of months because UFC has 8 shows between now and then. One coming up on Saturday. And there's a, you know, this is a show, you kind of look up and down the card. There are some very interesting fights on this show, and I didn't want to sleep on, so that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on. Starting with the main event, this is, again, Fight Pass only, very early morning. Holly Holm against Betch Gahaya. Holly Holm, obviously, she of the Rousey Slayer heritage, and since then has come on hard times. This, I mean, you have to say this is essentially a must-win fight for her against a fighter in Betch Gahaya that, you know, on paper, she should be able to beat, and obviously she's had her issues with Rousey as well, but she has come up with some victories here and there. Hasn't really been super impressive, but this is a loser leaves the UFC affair, but I think for Holm, there's a lot riding on this fight, and it'll be interesting to see how she responds and how she comes out of this, because with the loss, it's, you know, it's like, why is the UFC even keeping her around at this point? It'd be quite a fall.
Yeah, if Holm finds a way to lose this fight, like, the Buster Douglas comparison is just going to be too hard to ignore. Yeah. Like, which would be unfair, I think, for a variety of reasons, because Holm was not young when she got into MMA. She's not young now. She was never going to have, like, this really long and kind of standard career. Like, she was 30 something when she had her first MMA fight. She's got a lot of wear on her at this point. Like, she's been a combat sports athlete for the better part of 2 decades. Like, that's a long time to be getting hit in the head and to be going through the grind of training, even though she's still incredibly physical and quite exceptionally athletic, like, she's still been at this for a very, very long time. So when the drop came for her, it was going to drop fast. With that said, I don't think she loses this fight. I think Becca Hea has gotten a lot of crap over the years, I think, because of the way that she talked herself into the Rousey fight, because of how that went down, all of that, and somewhat deservedly so, I guess. But she's a better fighter than she gets credit for being. She's kind of matured into a pretty good counterpuncher. She's durable. She's pretty mean. She's willing to get in there and throw with you. She has a game that makes sense and that works for her. She's just not especially athletic. She's not especially imposing, and she doesn't have an especially deep kind of game. But she's better than she gets credit for. With that said, Holm should still win this because she's way bigger. She's way more physical. She's way more athletic. And, you know, she should be able to negate most of what Kohea wants to do. But with that said, yeah, if Holm loses, I don't see what there is for her after this, like, because she doesn't work cheap. And is it worth it to have her fight like the dregs of the bantamweight division? There's basically no middle ground here for her to get a couple of rebound wins and get back up. Either you're fighting nobodies or you're fighting the elite, which I guess at that point would include Betch Kohea.
Yeah, I mean, looking at Betch Kohea, her victories since she's been in the UFC since, December 2013, Julie Kedzie, Jessamyn Duke, Shayna Baszler, Jessica Ai. That's it. You know, and she's lost to Rousey, lost to Raquel Pennington, and coming off a draw against Miriam Renault in her last effort. Yeah, I mean, this is a very good test to see kind of where Holm is at. And I think you're right. If she loses, it's like, what? I mean, who could you have her potentially go in there that she could beat? And at that point, like, what? I think almost that kind of run has been over. And you're right. I think the pay thing is also there too. Is she's not a she's not fighting for 8-8. She makes good money. There was a lot made of that negotiation when she first came in, and she's made some money. But yeah, the fight miles. I think everyone tends to forget that she had this long boxing career before. And do you think it just gets to a point where at some stage a fighter is this is as good as they're going to get, and to maybe expect some sort of, you know, I know she got her blue belt in jiu-jitsu recently, I believe, and I wonder if there's that much she can evolve to martial arts wise is actually going to be able to help her in the professional field.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's a striker, and there's a limit to how good she's going to be. And, like, she's also been trained as a striker by Mike Winklejohn for 20 years. Like, how much more does she have to learn from him in that regard? Like, we saw her try to clinch and wrestle a little bit against Jermaine Durandamy, and it went basically nowhere. But, you know, at this point, she's been in MMA for 4+ years. She's been in that gym for a really long time. Like, I just don't think there's a lot of room for her to improve those things. It wouldn't surprise me if she came out and she had a couple good wins and got right back up there. But also there are some kind of inherent limitations to her game, and those have always been there. And in Rousey, she got literally the perfect stylistic matchup that made her look, I think, better than she actually is. Not that she's a bad fighter or anything like that. That's not at all what I'm saying. But, like, I think that her first couple of fights in the UFC against Rocky Pennington and Marion Renault told us who Holm is as a fighter. And the first 4.5 rounds against Miesha Tate told us who Holm is as a fighter. And the memory of what she did against Rousey has kind of overshadowed the fact that, no, we kind of know who Holly Holm is, and she's not the fighter that beat Rousey, like, or as good as she looked against Rousey. She's not as bad as she could be made out to be based on this losing streak, but she's also not that fighter.
Right. The other really intriguing fight on the show, and kind of a to see where these guys are at, kind of almost a redemption story. This is a just interesting fight from a lot of angles, is Tarek Saffiedean and Rafael Dos Anjos, the former lightweight champion, coming back against coming off back-to-back losses against Eddie Alvarez and then Tony Ferguson back in November 2016, deciding to go up to welterweight. And, you know, he's fought a who's who of guys over the past few years, obviously a great run that got him a lightweight title. Is he was just kind of this middle-of-the-road guy, and then all of a sudden win this great run, got the title, and then has fallen some hard times here in against some really upper echelon competition. Now he looks to reinvent himself at 170 pounds at, how old is he? He's 32 years old, so not old, but, you know, he's got some miles on him, and obviously it's a little bit tough once you pass that 30-year-old mark. I'm interested to see how he physically looks. I think sometimes these guys we've seen weight class jumps can work in the cases of Kelvin Gastelum. In other cases, it just doesn't work due to size and it just, you know, height and all this stuff. What are you looking for out of Dos Anjos on Saturday?
So I think this is a good stylistic matchup for him in his first fight up at welterweight. Safadine likes to stick and move, but he also does not like pressure, and RDA at heart is still a guy who wants to get in your face and kind of blast you with shots. Safadine also doesn't work at an extraordinary pace, and RDA, especially if he's not cutting a ton of weight, should be able to really push that against him. So I look at this as a good soft step up to 170 for Dos Anjos. I think Dos Anjos still has a lot left in the tank. He's 32. He's been fighting for 13 years now, but I think he has the kind of game that will age pretty well. Like, he's not a defensive wizard, but he also doesn't get hit needlessly. So he doesn't take a massive amount of damage. He mixes strikes and takedowns pretty well. He uses the fence well, which should negate some of the size disadvantages he might face at up at welterweight here. Basically, I think he's buying himself another 3 or 4 good fights by moving up. That's kind of my sense on this. And
I was one point that you kind of brought up was a fighter aging well. And I think sometimes that's an interesting concept, because I think sometimes we think of guys getting knocked out as a reason that a fighter wouldn't, quote unquote, age well. But there must be you kind of alluded to some other factors. What in your mind kind of is helpful for a fighter in order to age well throughout the years?
So I think the number one thing that I look for is, are they taking a lot of damage? That's really big. Are they getting hit at a high rate? Are they eating a lot of shots that they don't need to be eating? Not necessarily because of what it says about their fights, but because of what it says about their training practices. So you get hit way more in sparring than you do in a fight. And if you're just standing there with your chin in the open, getting blasted in fights, even if you don't get hit that much in total, but you get hit at a high rate, then in sparring sessions that you're presumably doing a fair few of, you're going to get hit a lot there too. So that I use that as a proxy marker to kind of estimate how much damage are guys really taking, like how quick are they going to age in that regard. RDA, not a guy who's real easy to hit clean, hard all the time. Like, he doesn't get hit at a very high rate. So that says to me that he's probably not taking a ton of damage in there. Do you have multiple skill sets that you can lean on and put together in clever ways to game plan for specific opponents? Do you have craft in that regard? RDA has craft. Guys like Robbie Lawler had a lot of craft. And you only get craftier as you get older. Also, are you a good athlete to start with? Do you have some room to lose a step and still be quick, fast, strong, athletic, all of that? RDA does. Other guys who have aged well, Vitor Belfort, Robbie Lawler, very athletic too. So even when they were not quite as physically gifted as they were in their youth, they could still compete at a high level with younger fighters. Those are the basic things that I look for. Athleticism, are you taking damage? Do you have depth and craft to your game? Are you fundamentally sound?
That's fascinating. I'm curious about this came up a lot with Jose Aldo, with obviously his recent loss against Max Holloway, and kind of understanding where he's at. And you hear a lot about Jim Moores and wondering if he's taken so much abuse in some of these training camps at Jim Moores that maybe it's starting to kind of catch up to him. Is kind of one of the great equalizers. One of the things we'll never really know unless we actually saw this footage is exactly how much damage these guys take in training camp, and isn't that kind of maybe this next evolution that we need to take in training camp and how athletes perform in the sport is minimizing the damage that they take in camp so they can save it for when they actually get out there in the cage?
Yeah, I mean, you look at basically every other sport and there's a more or less robust dialogue about best training practices going along. Like, wrestling coaches get together every year and they talk about best practices for things like weight cutting and how do we avoid injuries, things like that. Like, there are coaches associations in basketball and football and baseball and hockey, and they get together and they talk about things like this. And they're like, I've noticed these good things, and there are empirical studies. We don't have any of that in MMA. And as wary as I am of the UFC exercising ever more centralized control over the sport with things like the Performance Institute, also, honest to God, like, somebody needs to be having conversations like, you know, like there are times when it seems like what's happening at Nova Uniao or at AKA is basically the coaches like just throwing wrenches at guys or kettlebells while they're training. Yeah. It's like the only way to explain how everybody is always getting injured. But in general, I do think as we have a crop of relatively well compensated fighters who are getting older, who can take a little more of their training into their own hands, guys who can make decisions about, you know, I don't need to be doing as much of this or that. Like I think about Dustin Poirier talking a lot about cutting back on the sparring, or Robbie Lawler having gone years without sparring before picking it up a little again when he went into his title run. Dos Anjos is a good example of that, getting out of Kings and doing his own thing where probably he's not doing as much sparring. Because when you get to that point, like sparring is very useful, I think, early in your career because you need the experience. You need to be in there with guys who are going to try to come after you. Like you need to build some of that mental fortitude and strength and killer instinct that you can only get through those kinds of sessions. But past a certain point, you don't need to do that anymore. Like, and that's one of the things that occurs to me about Holly Holm is people talk about her in the gym. She just goes buck wild. Like every sparring session for her is a war. You know, and when you're, what is she now, like 36, 37, something like that?
Yeah.
You don't need to be doing that anymore. Like if you haven't gotten the point by the time you're 37, you're probably not going to get it. Like you don't need to be sparring like that. So I think that there's a dialogue to be had around those things.
And if kind of round out the rest of the card, obviously going back, Tarek Saffiedine, he's badly in need of a win. He's lost three of his last four. Rory McDonald, Rick Story, Stun Gun Kim, and he has one win over Jake Ellenberger. Definitely needs a win there. And speaking of someone that needs a win, could be one of these guys that we hear retires or kind of where he's at in this point in his career, fighting the co-main event, Andrei Arlovsky. With a loser of four straight, and it's not looked good. Obviously, the Travis Brown fight back in the day, that was pretty fun. But since then, lost against Stipe Miocic, Alistair Overeem, Josh Barnett, and then Francis Ngannou pretty badly his last time out. I mean, are you seeing anything with Arlovsky that shows he has anything left in the tank?
I think he had his renaissance, and I would be surprised if he had another one. Is the way that I would put it. Like he had that nice little second run where he put together some good fights, that knockout of Travis Brown, I think being the culminating one there, or the god awful fight with Frank Mir. Like that was basically Arlovsky's little mini renaissance. And I don't think we're going to get another one. Like there comes a point where you've just taken too much damage. You've taken too many shots. No matter how much craft you have, when you get in there with guys who are going to hit you real hard, like there's just not much to be said about that. I don't know if Tabura is the guy that's going to knock him into a final retirement or anything like that. Tabura has never seemed like that guy to me. But if Tabura does like just flatline him, then you have to think that Arlovsky is going to call it quits. Like that's because if you're getting flatlined by a not especially talented or gifted puncher, then what are you going to do? Like that's you got to call it.
And with 38 years old, four straight losses, as I mentioned, all finishes, three of them via TKO. Yeah, you would hope that somebody is in his ear at that point thinking, you know, you have a lot of – at 38, I mean, 38 and fight years is old, but as far as, like, life, it's young. So, you know, you want to make sure this guy has some brain cells left for the rest of his life. So hopefully we'll see what happens with him on Saturday. And looking up and down the card, is there any other fighters or fights that stuck out to you as interesting?
Yeah, I'm interested in Colby Covington versus Dong Hyun Kim. I think because A, Covington is about as good – is one of the two real good prospects that I have my eye on in that division, the other being Kamaru Usman. And also because Kim kind of has what a friend of mine, Phil McKenzie, refers to as a legacy ranking. Like occasionally you get this in divisions where you have guys who haven't fought all that often, who have been in kind of a weird spot. Like they've spent some time injured. Well, there's been some real turnover at the top of the division. Like you look at the guys that Kim's beaten – He doesn't have, I don't think, a single win over a guy who was ranked in the top 10 at the time, and yet he's ranked fairly highly. But at the same time, he's only ever lost really to guys who are elite, you know, Tyron Woodley, Damian Maya, guys of that caliber. So this is a chance for Covington to get like a step up in competition against a guy who is legitimately good, but who's maybe not quite as good as we've been led to believe for many years. So I'm interested in that from that perspective. Also, yeah, I mean, I think Covington is just a hell of a fighter. I think he's got everything necessary to be kind of a new school force at the top of that division. Otherwise, there's one more that stands out to me, not because like I'm super pumped about the fight itself, but because there's a guy debuting on the card named Carlos John de Tomas. CJ De Tomas. He's from the Philippines. And I was watching the tape of his last fight before the UFC. He's like 19 years old or 20 years old or something ridiculous like that. And he, in his last fight, was fighting a guy who had beaten his father in a fight. Huh. Like, I just thought that was the most ridiculous thing. It made me feel so old. So I've got my eyes on this. I'm like, how have I been watching this sport long enough for guys to be fighting guys who beat their dads? Like, it blew me away. So that was kind of my one note on that, on the undercard here.
And for those that are up in the morning watching the show, a couple of names that you might be familiar with in the past, obviously Takanori Gomi and his long run. Alex Aceris is fighting in the undercard, as well as Justin Scoggins as well in different fights. And there's some little bit of stuff, you know, could be worse things to do on a Saturday morning, watch some UFC from Singapore. Well, good. Well, I think this has been a good discussion about the show. Before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to plug, obviously, Twitter, and we talked about the podcast, but I want to give you the floor, and where can people find you, read you, listen to you? The floor is yours.
You can find me on Twitter at Patrick_Wyman, on Facebook, Patrick Wyman MMA. You can find before every big fight, and if ever there is something like interesting and meaningful happening in MMA, I will have a piece up on Deadspin about that. But mostly I'm writing about pay-per-views. On the Washington Post, I have a pre-fight analysis for every big pay-per-view headliner up on there, and then I do live coverage for them as well, though not for UFC 213. The Fall of Rome comes out every other Thursday, experimenting with going a little more than that. And next month, I'll have my new show coming out. It's called The Tides of History. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
And keep your ears unwaxed, I guess you could say, as well, for the podcast.
Exactly.
You can go ahead and steal that one. Patrick Wyman, congrats on all the success. Great to hear. We'll have you on again. Thanks so much for dropping by Josh Jason's Punch Out.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. Much appreciated.
All right. Big thanks to Kevin Ioli. Big thanks to Patrick Wyman. Could have talked to them for hours, but obviously schedules are tight. So happy to get as much time with them as I could. What a week, huh? Mayweather, McGregor. We have this UFC event coming up, and obviously we're in the throes of so many UFC events happening and things like that. We'll hopefully going to do a recap of sorts to kind of, you know, after June is over, to look back and maybe some of the highlights and see what stood out to people and so on. There was so much. I mean, we didn't even talk about the Max Holloway versus Jose Aldo victory, or the Max Holloway victory over Jose Aldo, rather, and what that means for featherweight. I think finally everyone can kind of move on and kind of really sets the division up pretty nicely for the next year. And obviously Mark Hunt being Derek Lewis last week, a little bit of a surprise for me. I thought Lewis was going to win. I thought he was younger. I tweeted this. I thought that this was kind of going to be the setup for Miocic versus Lewis. You know, Miocic gets that fast victory in his last outing, and obviously maybe the hope is that Lewis is going to do the same, and then it was going to set up maybe an August encounter between those guys, assuming they don't, you know, that Lewis didn't take too much damage or anything like that. But, you know, I know that Dave Meltzer keeps saying that Kane is the big fight, but you have to worry about the Kane injury. He's so far out of my mind for whatever reason. I think just because he's been so much on the shelf these past couple of years. He's looked impressive when he's been in there, but there's this thing, and you have to worry about that stuff, which is really unfortunate. But, at this point, I think Miocic versus Velasquez is definitely the fight to make, if you can do that maybe for August or September. You know, I think that'd be a big one, probably September, again, depending where it fits. I mean, what's interesting about the Mayweather-McGregor stuff in terms of pay-per-view is kind of where you place your show after that. I don't think they're going to be doing any pay-per-view the week before. I think that'd be suicide financially. It'd be stupid to do that. So my guess is they're going to maybe give it 3 weeks after. Then you have the Canelo Triple G thing. So I think that September schedule is going to be a little bit lean. I think they're going to try to stay away from any pay-per-views that month. So maybe I hate to wait for another title fight or a heavyweight title fight until October, but strategically that might be the play to make. Maybe in a place like Houston, which they've obviously run some big shows in before. I don't know why Houston just came to mind, but it seems like every August or every fall that they tend to run there. But now that I'm thinking of it, I think they actually just ran there this past Super Bowl weekend. So perhaps that wouldn't be the best place to run. Anyway, October is probably going to be where you would see a Miocic versus Velasquez fight. where it'd make the most sense, unless they could do something on short notice in, you know, July or something like that. But I think that's very, very unrealistic at this point. So maybe, maybe late September, early October, that could be some fun, assuming both guys make it. And we'll kind of see if Derek Lewis is actually going to come back and where Mark Hunt fits. And, you know, we're kind of in that mode of trying to find fresh matchups for these heavyweights who have essentially have fought each other nonstop over the past few years. So we'll kind of see where that goes. And this UFC Singapore show should be pretty fun. Obviously, the Saturday morning shows are can be a lot of fun, and there's some interesting names on that main card, as Patrick and I talked about. So very interested in checking that out, and we're going to call it good for here. So you can read my work on WrestlingObserver.com. Again, that post on McGregor Mayweather is up now, and kind of my thoughts on everything. Some of the stuff I alluded to during the Kevin Ioli interview, but you can let me know what you think of the column. If you read it on Twitter, you can tweet me at Josh Nason, JOSHNASON. You can also email me, josh@WrestlingObserver.com, anytime for questions, ideas, any of that good stuff. Hate mail, if you want to send that and make me cry, feel free and go ahead to do that. So, with that said, big thanks to Kevin Ioli, big thanks to Patrick Wyman, and big thanks to all you guys for listening. This has been another edition of Josh Jason's Punch Out. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.